It was just past midnight when we pushed through the pulsating crowd at Leon's, the club's neon lights casting dizzying shadows that flickered to the rhythm of the thumping bass. My friends and I, a tight-knit group of college besties, had chosen a booth near the dance floor, our laughter mingling with the eclectic beats. Among us was Rachel, that's me, always the more observant one, scanning the sea of faces, soaking in the night's ecstatic energy. Suddenly, our giggles were sliced by a chilling interruption. A man, who I later knew as David, approached us. His appearance struck a discordant note against the club's vibrant backdrop. His hair was unkempt, eyes darting nervously beneath heavy brows. He was sweating bullets, and his underarms were covered in sweat stains. And his smile, there was something ominous about it. He was holding two Prime energy drink cans and was chugging them down like he was a stranded man in a desert who had suddenly found water. He was also shaking erratically, clearly under the influence of drugs, and there was something nasty about his expression. "Hey ladies, care for some company?" His voice attempted casual charm but faltered into an eerie monotone. My friend Sarah brushed him off with a dismissive hand gesture.
"No thanks, we're good. Yeah, just move along, buddy. You're not getting any around here."
David's face twitched with annoyance as he lingered a moment longer, his eyes narrowing as he surveyed us.
"I can have any one of you. But tell you what, honey pie, I'm a ride you won't survive."
With a grunt, Sarah spitted out her drink on him as she laughed at what he said. The rest of my besties took out our phones and started making snaps of him. He was red, clearly livid and embarrassed. With a grunt, he turned and stumbled away, the crowd swallowing him up. We resumed our evening, dismissing the encounter as just another oddity in the club's tapestry of nighttime adventures. We were all in our prime, and not a day would go by if we were in a club and not get hit on by the creepiest of dudes thinking they'd have a chance. But the atmosphere shifted perceptibly. The air grew thicker, the beats now pounding with a sinister urgency. It was then, amidst the cacophony of sounds and bodies, that chaos erupted. A series of sharp, thunderous cracks split the music. Screams spliced the air, a terrifying counterpoint to the previous fun. In an instinctive move, we ducked under our table, the world around us morphing into a nightmare of flashes and shouts.
"It's him, the guy from before. He's got a gun." "No freaking way. Oh my God, he knows where we are. Oh God, he's shooting at people. I think someone's dead."
The reality of her words sank in as we huddled closer, the sound of gunfire growing nearer, almost matching the beats of the music. I risked a glance and saw David moving methodically through the crowd. His movements were precise, his face a mask of detached fury. People fell around him, their dances of joy brutally cut short.
"We need to get out of here now."
But before we could make our move, a body thudded against our booth, spurring a collective scream from our group. The woman was gasping, blood blossoming on her shirt like a gruesome flower. In that moment, our survival instincts overrode our shock. We crawled, scrambled, and clawed our way toward the nearest exit. He was after us. We should not have insulted him like that. As we neared the exit, the unthinkable happened. A bullet grazed my arm, searing pain flashing through me as I stumbled forward. The exit just loomed ahead. We were almost there, almost safe. But then, another shot rang out, closer this time, and darkness edged my vision as I fell down. A sea of people rushed over me, and that is when it dawned on me that as everyone was running toward the exit, this might just trigger a stampede.
"Rachel, come on, you can do this."
I nodded weakly, my body on autopilot, driven by the primal urge to survive. I tossed my heels away and sprung up on my bare feet. We spilled into the alley, the cool night air hitting my face, laced with the acrid smell of gunpowder and fear. We were out, but not safe. Not yet. The sound of David's rampage echoed in our ears as we ran, knowing that the nightmare was far from over. Our escape into the alley was a brief respite, the cold air sharp in our lungs as we pressed against the grimy brick wall, trying to make sense of the horror unfolding just yards away. The sounds of gunfire continued to pierce the night, each shot a reminder that death was just a wall away.
We can't just run. We need a plan. What plan, Sarah? We need to get as far away as possible. This is a dead end. The alley doesn't lead anywhere. Damn. Call 911. Oh my God, Rachel, your arm!
I felt the blood from my arm soaking into my sleeve, each heartbeat a throbbing reminder of our peril. The alley offered darkness as a cloak, but the closed street promised no options. We moved half-running, half-stumbling towards the street at the alley's end. That is when another round of gunfire erupted, closer now. We froze, the reality dawning on us that David might have exited the club. Peering around the corner, I spotted him. His back was to us, his body language erratic as he scanned the area, the guns in his hands grotesquely steady. We pulled back, our breath shallow. The wait was excruciating. After what seemed an eternity, his movements redirected away from us, drawn by some unseen stimulus. We seized the moment. We rushed in the opposite side and hid behind a dumpster. I was just left with Sarah. My other friends were probably still inside.
Call 911 now.
She did, and we waited for a few moments as the gunshots went further and further away. Soon, the police sirens filled every space. There was even a chopper there within a few minutes. And only after some disturbance, we heard a much louder, bolder gunshot. We later got to know that the snipers had got him. I remember wailing as the police finally found us. We were taken to a hospital. The emergency room was a blur of motion and urgent voices as the doctors tended to my wound. The police arrived soon and started an inquiry. I recounted the story, my voice detached, as if the horror belonged to someone else. It later came to light that David was a schizophrenic psychopath who was out on parole. He was previously thrown in jail after killing three dogs. The investigations further revealed that his prime energy drink got spiked, due to which his psychosis was triggered. Our making fun of him only added insult to the fire, and he then proceeded to pull out semi-automatic weapons that he was keeping in his truck and attack the Bounders before storming in. 12 people died in that massacre. At least 27 were injured, and I was lucky that the bullet missed me by just a whisker. Thankfully, none of my besties were seriously hurt, but survival felt hollow, tainted by the screams and bloodshed. I knew the nightmare wasn't truly over. It would live on in our memories, in our dreams, a dark reminder of the night when a simple rejection sparked a descent into madness. I wouldn't wish this horror on the worst of my enemies. It was a typical Friday night, or so it seemed, when my sister Anna and I decided to have a little fun at the expense of our neighbor, Mark. Our mothers were friends. We knew that he was an insomniac college student, always buried in his textbooks and visibly on edge from his lack of sleep. He had always been weird, too shy, creepy stares. My sister actually called him psycho. From our bedroom window, we could see directly into his study, where the glow of his desk lamp often burned well into the night.
Let's give Mark a little show. Maybe he'll smile for once.
I hesitated for a moment, aware of the dark circles under his eyes that had deepened over the past week, but the temptation for a bit of mischief was too strong. We started making faces and playfully waving, trying to catch his attention. Instead of the annoyed smirk or dismissive wave we expected, there was no reaction. Mark was staring into his computer, chugging another prime energy drink, as was his ritual every night. I really thought that chugging so many energy drinks would drive an insomniac crazy. Little did I know, I was soon going to be proven right.
I bet he doesn't even know we're here. He's like a zombie. Is he like gay or something? I don't think so. He did ask out Betty for a dance last month. Betty? No freaking way. She is like way out of his league. I know, but he just like stares at girls like a creep. I bet he's a virgin. Let's find out. How? I'll give him a proper show.
My sister yelled out his name to finally catch his eyes, and before I could even react, she quickly lifted up her top to give him a quick view. I was shocked by it, but instead of being embarrassed, Mark stared at us like he was going to kill us. His head suddenly snapped up, his eyes locking onto ours with an intensity that sent a chill down my spine. He stood abruptly, his chair clattering to the floor. For a moment, he just stared, and then he yanked his curtain shut.
Maybe that was too much. He looks really messed up. Or maybe he is gay.
Guilt nibbled at me as we retreated from our window, deciding to call it a night. The fun had evaporated, replaced by a growing unease. We went about our bedtime routines, my sister with her nighttime Korean skincare ritual, and we went to sleep. Just about an hour later, I was jolted awake by a faint noise. The house was dark, the only light coming from the moon casting shadows across the room. I listened, holding my breath, and then I heard it again. A soft, scraping sound, like metal against wood. Our parents were out of town and my sister was asleep beside me. Hence, the sound really worried me.
Emily, did you hear that?
Nodding, I slipped out of bed and crept to the door, my heart pounding in my chest. The sounds grew louder, more purposeful. That is when I freaked out. Somebody was in the house, and it felt like they wanted us to know of their presence. We tiptoed down the hallway, the floorboards creaking under our feet. As we passed the kitchen, the moonlight illuminated a figure, the unmistakable outline of Mark, a knife glinting in his hand.
Oh my God, what the f-
My sister screamed as loud as she possibly could. Panic surged through me as Mark turned, his eyes wild, a terrifying grin spreading across his face.
Back to the room. Lock the door.
We raced back, slamming the door shut and locking it just as Mark had reached it. The sound of the knife scraping against the wood door filled the room as we backed away, terror gripping us. Mark's voice seeped through the crack under the door, a sing-song tune that was more chilling than a scream. Come out, ladies. You surprised me with your teasing. Now I am here with a surprise of my own. We were trapped. Our own home turned into a maze with a madman at the center. I grabbed my phone, my fingers trembling as I dialed 911, praying that help would arrive before Mark could find his way in. As I whispered our address to the dispatcher, the scraping at the door intensified. Mark was relentless, his voice oscillating between coaxing whispers and his frenzied taunts. He was kicking at the door again and again, and then scraping the wood off with his sharp knife. My sister kept shrieking while I tried to get the help as fast as possible.
Please hurry, he's trying to break in. Let's barricade the door or else he will get in.
We pushed our heavy dresser against the door, the heavy wood scraping against the floor with a thud. It brought us a moment of reprieve, though the pounding of the door began almost immediately. The solid oak trembled under Mark's blows, his desperation palpable in the force of each strike.
Emily, we're gonna die. God, please save us. I don't want to die.
Gripping her hand, I felt a surge of protective fury.
No. We are not dying tonight.
The room seemed to shrink, the walls closing in as we huddled behind our makeshift barricade. Mark's shadow loomed under the door, his breathing heavy and ragged. Suddenly, the pounding stopped. Silence hung in the air, thick and heavy. We exchanged a glance, neither daring to breathe. Then, the sound of glass shattering from the living room broke the eerie quiet.
You can't hide forever, ladies. I need my fun.
His voice came from outside. We stood in shock. The back door. He was trying another way in by climbing the pipes to our window. Acting on impulse, I peeked out the window. The street was still empty. No signs of the promised help. We couldn't wait any longer. As I saw him climbing up the pipe with his terrifying laughter, I ran inside, pulling out the dumbbells I was using for my home workouts, and dropped them. The first one hit his shoulder, not deterring him, but the second one slammed into his face, and he fell down, weeping in pain. I pulled my sister as we climbed out the window hurriedly, jumping on the roof of the garage, and then we jumped a wall into our neighbor's house, our feet hitting the cold grass of their lawn as we ran for our lives. We kept running out on the street, the adrenaline masking the pain of our injuries. Then, finally, the flash of red and blue lights appeared at the end of the street. Relief flooded through me, so intense it was almost debilitating. The police moved swiftly. They entered our home, guns drawn. We clung to each other, watching from the safety of the police car as more officers arrived. It didn't take long for them to bring Mark out in handcuffs, his head bowed, his body language that of defeat. The sight of him, so different from the frenzied monster who had chased us, was surreal. He seemed smaller, diminished somehow, but the terror he had inflicted was too fresh, too raw to invoke anything but a shudder from me. My sister hugged me as we both cried.
It's over. He can't hurt us now.
Later, as we sat in the hospital, nurses tended to our cuts and bruises. The physical wounds would heal, but the night's horrors had etched deep scars within us, which would sing the terrors of that night for a long, long time.